Feel the pulse of the city. Feel the beat of the drum. Feel the bass blow your hair. In Las Vegas, live music delivers much more than sound. It's where music comes alive. With artists like Megan Thee Stallion, Maroon 5, Carrie Underwood, Shania Twain, Babyface, Lionel Richie, and many more. Every show is a playground for your senses. See the full summer lineup at visitlasvegas.com.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
Welcome to Orioles on the Verge. This is Zach Spedden, joined as always by Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens. And on tonight's episode, we're going to take questions from our listeners about all things Orioles, including the major leagues, minor leagues, and even the draft. And we're going to get into that in just a little bit. But first, Orioles on the Verge is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet Online, where the game starts. And we'll start now with our first mailbag question, which actually comes from me. I'm not even going to use a pseudonym. What are Gunnar's chances of winning American League MVP? It's really early, but Gunnar is tearing the cover off the ball lately. Very nice write-up this week from friend of the show Andy Koska in the Baltimore Banner, talking about how Gunnar has taken the step forward to not just being a good hitter, but one of the best all-around players in the game. So if you get a chance, go check that out. But I will start with Nick here. What are Gunnar's chances of winning AL MVP?
Have you learned nothing from Rock? That you got to make up the pseudonym when you do the, you ask yourself a mailbag question. I think he's got to be one of the favorites. If I don't know what the betting odds are right now, I don't think I can really look at like individual props here in Virginia. I don't know. I get weird stuff here. Some stuff I do get, some stuff I don't get. So I don't know what the betting odds are right now, but we're recording this Monday night, and I believe he just hit a home run. So now he is the leader in home runs. He's overtaken Kyle Tucker. They were tied coming into Monday night. So Gunner's at 16 now. Honestly, I feel like I've done a better job this year of paying attention to Major League Baseball as a whole, and not just the Orioles. But even so, if Kyle Tucker, like if I hadn't invested a lot of money in Kyle Tucker this year in like fantasy baseball, I would have no idea that Kyle Tucker is actually a three war player already, walking more than he's striking out, and has a WRC plus of 192. I would not know, because I feel like the Astros are just, they're a bad team this year. They're not playing well, at least right now, through the first 2 months or so of the season. Tucker's having a tremendous season, but I think he's going to get him completely overlooked, while Gunnar is a shortstop making the flashy plays, hitting home runs for a first place team. I feel like he's got to be the favorite at this point, and I wouldn't be shocked. Rookie of the year last year, MVP this year.
Yeah, he's got to at least be top five between Tucker, Soto, Judge, and Bobby Witt. I'll take Gunnar. I think he's going to be at least a top three finish. Is he about to earn the Orioles another draft pick for the second year in a row? I feel like it could happen. And yeah, I think he plays incredible defense at a premium position. He obviously hits the cover off of the ball. Love the new bat tracking, like bat speed data coming out. Gunner's up there in the top 20, and it shows he swings the bat hard and fast, and the ball goes a long way. So I absolutely love what he's doing. I feel like he's even starting to walk more at this point in the year. Obviously, teams are starting to pitch around him, but he's very opportunistic. One of his weaknesses early last year was taking too many pitches and not swinging the hittable ones. Well, that's no longer a problem. And he's 22 years old. How good is he going to be when he's 25, 26? Scary to think about.
Yeah, it's really close right now. And I feel like there's going to be a lot of push for Juan Soto to get the award. But then you also touched on some of the other candidates. Both of you did. Kyle Tucker, I think, is probably going to be one of those debates about, should a player on a team that bad get the MVP award? And then Bobby Witt Jr., he's having an incredible year. Aaron Judge is in the mix. I don't think Adley Rutschman is getting enough attention right now, but that's a separate topic for another day. But I have to think that when all is said and done, if the Orioles, I'll say this, I think if the Orioles win the American League East, Gunnar will win MVP. Because it's going to come down to a real dogfight at the end between the Orioles and the Yankees for that division this year. I think it's going to be close the whole way. If the Orioles win the American League East, I could see Gunnar beating out Kyle Tucker and Juan Soto to get it. If they don't win, then I think his numbers are going to have to be a little bit better than both of those players to get the award. But I think that if the Orioles win the AL East, Gunnar will win MVP.
Yeah, it's Juan Soto is a generational type player. I very much enjoy watching him, not this year because he is a Yankee, but I feel like, yeah, he doesn't have to do as much as Gunnar to win MVP award if the Yankees keep winning, but hopefully they don't. Ben has a question from Patreon. It says, anyone not yet in double A, and so not guys in low A because they're on rehab assignment, but anyone not yet in double A that you could see debuting in the majors this year? Zach, we'll go with you first.
I don't see it happening this year, and for one main reason, which is that the arms that the Orioles theoretically could fast-track, they're not going to do it. You know, we've heard about Levi Wells. I think it was Joe Doyle that said, if you put Levi Wells in the bullpen, you could fast-track him to the majors. The Orioles aren't going to do that. They're going to try to develop him as a starter, and I agree with that approach. I don't know if it's going to work, but I agree with trying it on the front end. Teddy Sharkey has been used in a way that I was not expecting him to be used, at least before he went on the IL this year, where he was having a lot of multi-inning relief outings, which tells me the Orioles don't plan on giving him the, you know, three outs in appearance and fast-tracking him through the minor leagues. There's some things they want to work on with him, and they feel like the extra innings are a valuable part of that process, even if he's not going to be a bulk innings guy later in the year. And I'll touch on Enrique Bradfield Jr., because we talked about him a lot in our last episode. I know that there's always been, really since he got into the organization, there's always been that question of, could we see him on a playoff roster in the not-too-distant future because of what he can do with his speed and his defense? I don't see that happening this year for two reasons. One of them is that as long as Jorge Mateo and Cedric Mullins are around, you've got those things covered. And even if Mullins' bat never gets going this year, he'll have a roster spot because of that. And the other is the Orioles have so many prospects for so few 40-man roster spots that I don't know how they would give one to Bradfield now when he's probably 2 years away from being an everyday major leaguer. So my answer to that question for now would be no.
Yeah, I'd also say no. I think the biggest candidates would be Teddy Sharkey, but he's hurt with a back issue. I definitely feel bad for him there tonight. And Matthew Etzel, I mean, we might be the Etzel Kings, but he ain't going to overpass some of these guys. Bradfield, you got Jorge Mateo performing really well on the active roster for your speed and defense. It's just really tough with a farm system this loaded, this deep. You're not going to leapfrog players enough where, like you said, you get put on the 40-man roster and you're taking that spot from someone who needs to be protected this coming off season. So I can't really see it this year. If Cameron Weston counts, since he started in single A, I think he would be the best candidate. But even him, I don't think it's in the cards this year. I think maybe the end of 2025 would be more realistic.
Yeah, I like the Weston shot, though. I think the two options for me would have been Bradfield and Sharkey, but Zach mentioned why for Bradfield. Mateo, we talked about that before the season started, about that option of, you know, adding Bradfield to a playoff roster. if you're going to go all in, push your chips all in. You traded for Corbin Burns. Let's go all in and win this thing. Like, worry about the 40-man protection stuff, the Rule 5 stuff later. Like, go win a World Series with Enrique Bradfield on the roster, playing defense and stealing bags for you. But that was also under the assumption of Mateo not sticking around. Like, that bat just becomes so inept that you can replace the speed in defense because the bat is just so inept at this point. You've got to get rid of him. But that is not the case right now. Actually, as we're recording this, Mateo is in a tremendous stretch at the plate and has found his groove right now. And is it going to stick? I doubt it, but you're going to ride that hot hand as long as you can. Even if he's not hot at the plate anymore, he has found I think the Orioles have found a role for him, or he's going to provide tremendous value. And Sharkey, like Bob mentioned, he's got the back injury. And when you watch Sharkey, like his control and command hasn't really been there when he was on the mound to start the year. And if you tweak that, like Zach mentioned, he's doing 2-3 or going multiple innings. I hate that. I'm not going to question the Orioles and their pitching development because it's been tremendous this year in the last couple of years. But I hate when they roll him out for a second inning. Just you know what you've got with Sharkey. He's a one inning just monster. Throw him out there for the one inning, let him do his job. But I feel like his control command could take him to a whole nother level, and there's zero need to rush him at this point. So yeah, I say no as well.
All right, let's move on to a question from Matt now. We have, after what we've seen from Paul Skeens and Jackson Holliday, do we still think Jackson Holliday is the best prospect in the league? He just would like to make sure people know that he does, but he feels like Skeen has closed the gap. Let's go with Nick.
I don't know. I think they're both tremendous prospects. And like, once Holliday's back in the majors hitting well, I think they both make the game of baseball better. I don't know. I don't see any reason to compare the two. I hope both are like multi-time all-stars and have epic battles for the next decade plus. That was a tremendous outing against Chicago the other day when he struck out with the first six batters or something. I hate when people are like, he's going to blow his arm out. There's Tommy John just around the corner. Like, I hate when people say that. Just enjoy the fact that Paul Skeens shoves and he's already doing it in the big leagues. And like, this Pirates team drafts, I love their drafts. I don't know if it's going to work out for them, but Jared Jones, Paul Skeens, like, they've got some pieces, especially in that rotation. Pirates are a fun young team to watch, especially from the pitching side of things. I don't know. Both can be tremendous players in their own right. One could be a multi-time all-star shortstop. One can be a Cy Young candidate. Two tremendous talents.
Yeah, I agree with Nick. The way I answer the question more directly is that, yeah, I still think Holliday is the top prospect in baseball just because of the impact that he could give you on an everyday basis. And not to mention, there always is a little bit of volatility attached to pitchers that you don't have attached to a middle infielder. But they're both excellent prospects. I hope that they both have good, long, productive careers because they're going to make the game better if they do.
Paul Skeens, just wait till Cade Povich makes his debut. No, he's a great pitcher. Him and that Pittsburgh rotation looks like it's going to be a lot of fun with Jared Jones moving forward. But only one of those guys, I think, still has a chance to come away with the World Series ring this year. So I'm going to stick with Holliday at number one.
Go now to this question from Dustin, who wants to look way ahead to the offseason. If the only signings next offseason are re-signing Corbin Burns and extending Adley and or Gunner, are you disappointed? This means there's no relief pitching or outfield signing of note. So basically, this is the offseason. Corbin Burns and Adley Rutschman and or Gunnar Henderson locked up staying long-term in Baltimore. Would that be a disappointment, Bob?
Disappointment. I would sign up for that in blood right now. I would be ecstatic if that's all the Orioles did. I feel like lock in the ace that you acquired and make that trade even better, stick him around to be a leader in the rotation, and you lock down Adley and or Gunner. Yeah, I'll take that any day of the week. I think, yeah, it would be nice to sign a free agent or two here or there that could help at a position where maybe the depth isn't as solid, but I will look, people are complaining, you need to trade some people because there's not enough room for all these guys. Give them a chance. Well, I'm happy with the depth we have, and I will stick to that and just run it back for the next 5 to 10 years. Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple caveats there, but like, I do agree that I would be pretty ecstatic with that as well. I think like the bullpen arms, like you can make a trade this season for a bullpen arm that's got, you know, additional years of control. Someone, whether it's McDermott, whether it's, I think we're going to talk about some arm, more relief arms here in a moment, but McDermott or one of these relief arms we're going to talk about in an upcoming question. If one of those guys, is going to pop and become a reliable bullpen arm for you. And I think there's a lot of talk like about Heston Kerstad. I know every Heston Kerstad highlight that goes up with him in Norfolk, it's this organization is wasting his talent. They should just trade him, get rid of him. Why is he in AAA? I don't know how you guys feel about this Kerstad stuff, but...
Texting between two different kinds of phones makes photos blurry, ugly, and security risky. Not just that. It also makes video calling, editing messages, or leaving a group nearly impossible. With WhatsApp, everyone can enjoy seamless messaging with the protection of end-to-end encryption. Streamline your messages across all devices on WhatsApp. Message privately with anyone you want. Click the banner or download now to learn more.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Santander is probably not going to be around next year, right? Maybe O'Hearn, you pick up the option. Both of those guys could be gone. They could say, we're moving on from O'Hearn as well. We're moving on. We're not going to re-sign Santander, give him a contract extension. He's gone too. But I think at least one of those guys will be back next year. O'Hearn's the easier one. You just pick up the option, I think. I think it's a team option. I can't remember. Either way, I think O'Hearn can come back next year. You can move Kershaw out there in right field. Maybe he is that natural replacement to Santander. And I think sending him down to AAA right now is, I have no issues with it whatsoever. Like, he can stay down there for the rest of the season, to be completely honest, as long as everything else remains status quo. Like, the injuries, there's no big injuries. Everybody's hitting. Like, Kershaw can stay in AAA for the rest of the season and be the Santander replacement next year. And I think it's a good sign that he's in AAA right now, because the organization, if they weren't believers in him, then he would be filling the Kyle Stowers role right now. Kyle Stowers, this is like a good job. You get the big league paycheck, you get the big league benefits for as long as this run continues. But Kershaw, we want you getting at bats every single day down there in AAA, because you're our guy next year. You could have been that guy this year. Kowser took over. That's a great problem to have, but you're going to be our guy next year. So there's your replacement. I think one of these bullpen guys does pop. You can probably trade for somebody as well. You re-sign Corbin Burns, you extend Adley or Gunnar, you win another World Series next year after you win one this year.
Yeah, it's kind of, I don't understand the comments along the lines of, you know, trade Kerstad, there's no room for him on this team. Like you said, Santander's probably, and I mean, if he doesn't pick it up, he's probably not even going to get a qualifying offer, but I'm expecting him to get hot, as he usually does as the weather warms up. But I don't think he'll be back next year. Ryan O'Hearn, team option for $7.5 million. That's obviously going to be picked up. But if Kerstad, like Vivek said, is your Santander replacement, yeah, he can mix between right field and DH. And Ryan O'Hearn can still have the same role he does right now. And is Kerstad going to step in and be Santander right away? I don't know. Maybe. I think it's possible. But even if not, I don't think it's that much of a downgrade with the type of offensive profile that he has. But at the same time, would I be willing to deal Heston Kerstad theoretically in the right deal at the trade deadline for like a Ryan Helsley or whoever, elite closer? I would definitely at least consider it. So, you know, that's the great thing about having depth. You don't have to trade it. Elias has clearly proven that you can hang on and hang on. It's within your right. And at the same time, the right deal comes along, i.e. Corbin Burns, you pull the trigger and you move forward with that.
Yeah, I would be perfectly happy with that offseason because you keep around a guy who's going to probably be a Cy Young finalist this year and you're an ace, undisputed ace in Corbin Burns. And on top of that, you keep one of your franchise cornerstone players, or maybe both in this case. You can fill the other areas of the roster with the depth you have, which brings me to the point about Kerstad. I don't have any issue with him being in AAA right now because the at-bats clearly aren't there for him in the major leagues. And playing every 5 days against a right-hander and having to play out of position on the field, like playing left field at Camden Yards, or DHing all the time isn't really good for his development. And there is still some development with Kerstad. He's not a fully baked prospect yet. You look at him sometimes on defense, it's a little bit of a struggle. They've tried to incorporate first base, and so far I don't think that's really working. Maybe it won't have to in the end, but he hasn't quite taken that position the way I would have thought that he would have. So, but the bat is there. He's going to hit for power in the major leagues. I have no doubt about that. So, if next year he's your Santander replacement and you have Corbin Burns back and you have Adley or Gunnar signed long term, that's a win.
If you could only extend one, though, Gunnar or Adley, who are you extending?
The 22-year-old MVP. yeah, Gunnar's got a blank check in my book. Whatever he wants, give it to him. Yeah. Keep him here.
Agree.
Yeah, it's Gunnar.
Yeah.
And it's close. And I say that with all the respect in the world to Adley Rutschman, but mm-hmm. I would go with Gunnar.
Like it. Well, we talk about those bullpen arms and those depth. Anybody who's going to pop? So this is actually multiple people. I think two or three people. So sorry for not going back and seeing who the names were. That's my fault. But multiple people on Twitter have asked, who are some bullpen arms in the minors we could see contribute in the big leagues this season, Bob?
Well, Cade Stroud is that dude. He is a monster this year. He's figured out the command. He only has one walk over about 15 innings of work so far this season compared to 20 strikeouts. His cutter-sweeper combination is just disgusting. He basically dropped the four-seam fastball, which he could dial up to high 90s, and he's focused on just commanding a cutter, sweeper, changeup arsenal, and it's absolutely filthy, and I would expect him to be up, honestly, sometime in the first half, and I think he's going to establish himself as a back-end reliever arm this year, and just he's really the only one where I'm like, okay, this guy's going to help, and pretty soon. Other than that, I mean, Wanis and Charles still doing Wanis and Charles things, walking a little more than you'd like, but looks good to me. Nick Vespi's doing Nick Vespi things. Matt Crook is doing Nick Vespi things. And I like Luis Gonzalez. I think he's another one in the mold of a Albert Suarez. And he's a little bit older, but in 16 and two-thirds innings, he has 25 strikeouts and only three walks. So I think his 3.78 ERA is even better than that sounds.
Yeah, I agree with Bob. Stroud is the name at the top of the list for me. We talked about Jonathan Heasley a little bit on our last episode, and I know it's not a pitcher that a lot of fans necessarily want to see in the major leagues again this year, but I agree with the point that Bob made that his stuff in the majors looked better than the actual results were, and he has pitched very well at Norfolk, so I wouldn't rule out seeing him at some point. And I do think that someone in that glut of Rule 5 eligible arms or pitchers on the 40-man already, in Seth Johnson's case, at Bowie reaches the majors this year. Might only be for a cup of coffee, but don't be surprised if Trey Miguel, Kyle Bronowitz, or Brandon Young, or Seth Johnson for that matter, log major league innings before the end of this season.
Yeah, Stroud's the top guy for me as well. And Stroud's 2024 season, Bob just rattled off the numbers, insane stat line. And he picked right up where he left off in Bowie. In Norfolk this year. And that was the big thing we heard. I don't remember who wrote the article. I think it was John Mioli piece diving into Cade Povich and his start to the year. And he interviewed Justin Ramsey for that piece. And Justin Ramsey said one of the big things that Povich had to adjust to was the AAA ball. And once he got a feel for that, he started improving down the stretch last year, and now he's taken off this year. It's not the reason, but it's a big contributor. Cade Stroud, I mean, didn't even need to adjust to this AAA ball. He's settled in AAA pretty well. And last year, though, this isn't coming out of nowhere, because last year, to break this down kind of quickly here, last April, he allowed just one earned run, but he walked 8 guys and struck out 4. And then last May, he had an ERA over 16. In June, he started turning things around. He had 15 strikeouts to 7 walks. July, 16 strikeouts to 5 walks. August, 14 strikeouts, 2 walks. 6 innings in September to close it out, he had 11 strikeouts in those 6 innings. He flipped that switch last year in Bowie and is just taking his game to a whole nother level this year. I think it's going to be he's going to be a contributor at some point for sure. Just Sunday alone, when he pitched 20 pitches, 7 whiffs, he had a 54% whiff rate, topped out at 97. I think that plays. Luis Gonzalez, I wrote about him recently over on Substack. I just think it'd be an awesome story, and he's pitching well. He's 32, former top 30 prospect in the system. Spent the last couple years pitching in Mexico, Asia, Italy, the Dominican. Fastball, slider, lefty. He's been getting a lot of whiffs down in Norfolk. I think he could be a contributor at some point, even just for a short term. And you look at the AA arms, and like Keegan Gillies probably has the better odds. But Dylan Hyde is a name. He's one of my favorite just pure relief arms in this system. But I'm much more hesitant to go with the guys down in AA right now because of that. You know, I think they need to adjust to AAA. Stroud obviously didn't need to, but yeah, I'd say Stroud and probably Luis Gonzalez for the top two for me.
All right. That means I'm up with the question. Let's go ahead and pull that up. Who's your most intriguing pitching prospect, not named Cade Povich or Chase McDermott? Zach? That's from The Bird is the word, by the way. Great commenter in our Discord channel.
You could really pull any pitcher out of that Aberdeen staff right now and talk about him. You could talk about Cameron Weston in the season that he has had so far. But for me, the most intriguing guy outside of those two was Luis De Leon. He went back to Delmarva this year, and I actually thought, based on the way he pitched last year, that he could have started this season in Aberdeen. But there was one thing he clearly needed to improve, which was his command. His command was a little inconsistent at Delmarva last year. He went back there to start this season and absolutely delivered on that. Command looked better. His secondaries, change up in the slider, looked better. The fastball is still an elite pitch. I have made the point before that I think De Leon has top 100 prospect traits. He's not there yet, but you look at a left-hander who throws that hard, who has two pitches that could develop enough alongside the fastball for him to be a starter, even if he ends up being one of those pitchers that's in the five and dive mold as a starter, he could still be a really good one. So keep an eye on him. He's now been promoted to Aberdeen, and I suspect he's going to have some ups and downs there because that low A to high A jump is so tough, but I think he can handle it, and he's only 21, and that's something to keep in mind, is that someone is that young and that good in high A, and I've really been pleased with what he's done so far this season.
Yeah, even going back to last year, 19-year-olds who throw 95 from the left side and have feel for multiple secondaries in low A, like, they don't grow on trees. And now Aberdeen has another 21-year-old stud international pitcher. Like, this isn't your daddy's Orioles minor league farm system anymore. This is a new farm system for sure. My gut said Luis De Leon when I was thinking about this question, but I'm a Michael Ferrett guy. This is my guy that I enjoy watching a lot down on Delmarva. Since the Orioles drafted him, and they drafted him as this scrawny 19-year-old JUCO kid, he's added 2 miles per hour to his fastball, which is up to 97. He's added more than 10 pounds. He's completely revamped his secondaries. Like, I think here's how it's going to play out with Ferret. He's going to continue pitching well this year. John Mueller is going to write an article about him, diving into him, and one of his pitchers on the farm series. Steve Molesky is going to interview him. There's going to be an interview with Michael Ferret on Masson. more people are going to acknowledge this kid exists. He's going to pitch 80 to 100 innings in Delmarva, and then they'll shut him down. And then next year, he's going to start as a top 25 prospect in the system. He's going to be on national lists. The real hype is going to begin. And next year, Michael Ferret is going to break out. Michael Ferret is going to be next year's Moises Chace, I feel like.
Interesting, interesting. I could see it. When I first read the question, Jackson Baumeister was the guy that popped in my head just because I feel like stuff looks great. They're clearly working on things, so I'm intrigued by that. But I'm going to go with my official answer as Edgar Portis, who pitched 5 no-hit innings on Sunday with 6 strikeouts. I don't even think he walked anyone, so it might have been perfect innings. I just think his stuff looks electric, and I think he just does not get talked about nearly enough for as good as he is and as good as his potential is. And I would include ourselves sometimes in that, but just because I don't know what it is. If it's because I think he started as a reliever in 2022 and didn't really pop out, like stand out significantly, but man, he is just getting better and better. And like I said in the past, he followed up Cameron Weston when Weston was still in Aberdeen, and he pitched fantastic. But it only took like 3 pitches of Portes coming in behind him for me to be like, whoa, like this was more impressive than what I just saw Weston do. So love both pitchers, love so many of the pitchers in this organization, but I'm going with Portes.
Good answers. And we'll go now on this question from Yoni, who says, despite his insane numbers, are you guys nervous at all about Cade Povich basically sitting at 91 miles per hour? With his fastball, I'll start with Nick.
Absolutely not. This is not your Drew Rahm fastball over here. I haven't played around with this baseball savant stuff for like 2 years, but I've been poking around a little bit more since they added the minor league search data function there. So I don't know if I'm even doing this right. Maybe you guys can at some point fact check me on this one. But if I search on StatCast looking at the AAA numbers, if I search by fastball only and I put in a 500 pitch minimum, which 500 pitches total, but then break it down just by fastball, AAA level only, and I sort by whiff rate, I see 92 pitchers on this list. And the fastball whiff rate in AAA, the leaders, Spencer Howard is number one, 35.6%. Chase McDermott is number two at 35% whiff rate just on the fastball. Cade Povich is number three at 33% whiff rate on just the fastball. And that includes like all variations of fastballs, cutters, all of it. I think that's pretty darn impressive. Extra note here, Justin Armbruster is actually 5th on that list at 31%, which I think was fascinating to see his name on there. But that's why, yeah, I'm not concerned. He can throw at 91 all day. He tops out at like 95 or so. He can throw at 91 all day if the rest of his repertoire is working as well as it is. And it's clearly getting swing and miss better than pretty much anyone else.
Yeah, I don't know if he's got the invisible like Keegan Aiken or just, you know, great extension, whatever it is, the hop, or just the mix of all his different pitches that he could throw for strikes. Clearly it's working for him, so not concerned. And I'm actually not surprised to see Armbruster up there because the off-speed stuff has been his problem 1,000% this year. But very cool because McDermott, we know how dominant his fastball is, I think. Talking about that reliever question, I mean, McDermott could come up towards the tail end of the season and just pump gas to help the team win out of the bullpen. But if Povich is just a notch or two under him, then clearly it's a good fastball no matter how much the velocity says.
I'm not concerned about it just because the movement of the pits has always sort of been the point with Povich's fastball that we're high on more than the velocity. It's nice that he can hit 94 or 95 in a start, but he's really at his best when he's changing speeds and he's not bringing the heat early in the game necessarily. He's a pitcher that I think works better when he's 90, 91 in the first inning and then reaches back later in the outing and hits 94 or 95 here and there, mostly 94. But that's what's going to make Cade Povich successful in the major league level. He doesn't have to throw 94 to make that happen because not only is the fastball a good quality pitch, but he has so much else around it in his repertoire that one of his pitches cannot work on a given night, but if two or three others are, he's going to find a way to be successful. So I'm not nervous about it at all.
Ready to pop the question and take advantage of 30% off? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com to get 30% off select lab-grown diamonds. That's BlueNile.com for 30% off lab-grown diamonds. BlueNile.com.
I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In two clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clear skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clear skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunchberries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. It's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunchberry.
No!
No one steals my Crunchberries.
I think you mean my Crunchberries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Like it. Two more questions here. Next one's from Vivek. Who are you guys looking at with pick 22 and pick 32 in the upcoming draft, which conference tournament play starts like this week? The draft is quickly approaching. We'll start with Zach on this one.
So I like a guy that you wrote up in your most recent Substack post, Orioles on the Verge at Substack.com, and who Jim Callis recently mocked to the Orioles, the 22nd overall pick. And that's Brody Brecht out of Iowa. Now, Brecht is one of those pitchers that has good stuff, but has not really delivered the results you would necessarily want to see. And there is a definite reliever risk there because at this point, he's really a two-pitch pitcher. Fastball, slider, not a whole lot else that he can bring to the table. But a couple of things that I think are worth noting. Digging into his background a little bit, he was actually a two-sport athlete until pretty recently. So he has only been focusing on baseball exclusively for the last year or two. So you have to figure that he's probably a little raw at this point. And the other thing is that he's getting better as the season goes on. You look at his numbers since April 1st, 61% strike rate, 59-17 strikeout to walk ratio, and it's held batters to an opposing average of, or opposing hitters to a batting average of 133. If there's one thing that we know the Orioles like in the draft, it's players who get better as the season goes along. That was a big reason why they took Jackson Holliday one overall a few years ago. And obviously this is a different situation, but I could easily see Brecht being the pick if he is there at 22, because he's getting better as the year goes on and he kind of fits the model that the Orioles like. They like pitchers with good fastballs who have a secondary that can be a plus, that they can build on that foundation and develop from there. We saw that with Trace Bright. We saw that with Jackson Baumeister. Brecht could be the guy that they do it with this year. And then for the second pick, where there's the second pick overall in the draft for the Orioles, 32 overall, I'm going to throw out a name here that is a little bit under the radar to this point, but Joe Doyle had a nice write-up about him in his mock draft back in April, and that is Northeastern outfielder Mike Sirota. And the reason I could see him being a target for the Orioles is that up the middle player has some power, but questions about the hit tool. If the Orioles can develop the bat, you're looking at a potential five-tool player. And let's face it, when you're picking 33rd, you're going to have to take a chance one way or another. You're not going to get a guaranteed prospect at that spot. You're going to get someone you're going to have to develop in some way, shape, or form. Sirota has not had a great season necessarily at Northeastern, but there's been flashes of good all-around potential from him. So this is someone that I've only been starting to follow very recently, but I would not rule him out as a target for the Orioles at the 33rd pick, because you figure Brecht fits their model for pitchers, and Sirota to an extent fits their model for hitters.
Yeah, I'm by far our least college guy, draft guy coming in beforehand. I'll catch up when it gets here, but just from what I've seen in our Discord, which appreciate Vivek and others like Nick who posts in there some really good information. I like Carter Johnson, shortstop in high school, who was getting some Gunnar Henderson comps. That should be self-explanatory why I like that. Birdie Brecht, yeah, I do love that. I would just love the Orioles to select a pitcher with the first pick, and somehow Orioles fans will still be in disbelief despite the trend that has been happening the past few years. And yeah, I saw Ken Caminiti's cousin or something like that is also mocked to the Orioles. I think Baseball America in with that second 42nd round pick, or not 42nd round pick, 42nd overall pick. So yeah, I'm excited for more pitchers, but I also would like to see us snag a high school position player with a little more upside.
This draft, I think, is a lot of comments out there about how this draft class doesn't really stack up to some more recent draft classes. But I still think that this could be even more fascinating draft class because it provides a lot more opportunity for discussion about the type of player I think the Orioles could pick. Like, if James Tibbs falls, the Florida State outfielder, I'm sprinting to the podium as I scream his name. If I'm Mike Elias, I know they don't like actually do that anymore, but figuratively speaking, he has just as many home runs as strikeouts this year at 21, which is insane. Makes a lot of contact and doesn't chase. Mississippi State outfielder Dakota Jordan, that's a guy that I'm falling in more and more love with. He's a sophomore with massive power, some of the quickest hands in the country, and like top four in the country as a freshman in average exit velo and 90th percentile. EVs at like 112 miles per hour. He knocks the snot out of the ball. My new crush has been Oklahoma State because this is the Orioles draft. How many guys have that Oklahoma State connection? Carson Binge from Oklahoma State, a lefty. He's a two-way player. So maybe we try again because Nolan McLean, we let that one slip through. Maybe we try again with Carson Binge. He throws 96 from the left side. And as a hitter, I've seen 60-grade power with 60-grade hit tool and a 60-grade outfield arm. I think that was Peter Flaherty over at Baseball America. He doesn't chase. He makes a ton of contact. 108 mile per hour, 90th percentile exit velos. Give me that guy all day if he's there at 22. I'm trying to think who else. That's a boring one. Luke Holman. Like, if I'm going to 32, Drew Beam out of Tennessee, I get like Garrett Stallings vibes just because Tennessee Friday night starter doesn't walk guys. Like, that's the extent of the comparison between Garrett Stallings and Drew Beam. So don't like turned off. Like, you're Garrett Stallings in the second round. Like, no thanks. Beam throws like 97 miles per hour. He tops out at 97. Doesn't walk anybody. Strikeout, swing and miss really isn't there, but could be a fun 30. Pick at 32. Luke Holman out of LSU. The guy's got more than 20 inches of induced vertical break. So, I mean, hoppy fastball. That's your guy. I don't know. I feel like, more theoretically speaking, I have the question for you guys. The Orioles are picking at 22. If evaluators consider this a down year in terms of the top end talent, if we assume that the team's ahead of Baltimore, I think about this a lot. Way too much. If the teams ahead of Baltimore lean more towards let's reach for the proven college bats, so like your Dakota Jordans, your Carson Binge, they're all gone. We're going to go safe. We're going to get the proven college bats because there's not that many of them at the top end talent. We're going to reach on those guys. And now you're the Orioles and you're looking at a lower tier of college bat. Do you reach as well and go after that safer college bat just to grab one? Or do you go the high upside high school route? Or do you go with the Brody Brecht or Jonathan Santucci out of Duke, pitchers with walk issues and extreme question marks? But like in Brecht's case, he has Paul Skeens quality stuff. It's like, which way would you go in that instance? I think that's the fascinating question I think I have that I think about coming into this draft.
Easily for me, it's take a risk. I mean, we have so much depth rising to the top of the system already. Might as well take some shots and hope that you can hit and just have another great, you know, top 50 type prospect in baseball at some point. So I'd go risk.
Yeah, I would go that route as well. I agree with Bob. You've got the pitching development plan in the farm system has come a long way in the last 2 years. You're as well suited now as you're ever going to be to take a risk on a pitcher. And with this class being deep, and as deep in college hitters as it is, not guys with high ceilings, but relatively high floors and safe prospects, I think there's enough of that in this class that you can get that kind of player at 32. But you might not be able to get a Brady Brecht at 32. You might not be able to get a Jonathan Santucci, which is another name to throw out there. So I'm glad you mentioned him, Nick. You might not be able to get him at 32, but there will be a college bat there that you can take a chance on, bring into your model, and see what you get out of him.
Yeah. If I would do illegal things to have Trey Savage out of ECU on this roster, like legitimately illegal things, but he's not going to fall. But I would just, I don't know. MLB Pipeline just mocked Brady Brecht to the Orioles at 22. Apparently he's like, you know, falling out because of the control issues, but pitching his way back into the first round. If Brody Brecht is the pick for the Orioles and they turn him into a major league starter, like, you can't say a single thing about this pitching development. I think that's like the icing on the cake. If this pitching development, that's why I would want Brecht to be the pick, because I want to see this team turn Brody Brecht into a major league starter, even with all of his question marks. A guy who doesn't walk that many guys even would be tremendous for this organization and the respect that they should get.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. That would be awesome. Last question I have here is from Jeff on Twitter, who wants to know, what's Billy cooking up down there in Norfolk, Nick?
I did not expect Billy Cook to hit this well in AAA. I don't know about you guys, but he's got a 143 WRC plus right now, and his walk rate is comparative to what it was in Bowie. The strikeout rate is as well. Like, it's still like 18-17% strikeout rate. I don't know. I was, again, digging into the Statcast stuff a little bit. He's not barreling the ball like at all. He's around 50th percentile in swing and miss in AAA. The hard hit rate's only like 30%, which is extremely low. The average exit velo is only 85 miles per hour, which ranks dead last among qualified hitters in Norfolk. But he's hitting well. He's getting on base. He plays first, second, left, right, center. He hasn't played center in a while, but he's played in the past. Like, I don't know. Like, he's good, versatile depth, if anything. Maybe he's a sweetener in the trade, but this is a 10th round pick out of Pepperdine, a fourth year senior who struck out at a 32% clip in Delmarva 2 years ago. And now he's striking out like half that and hitting what, 300 something, and is 43% above league average in AAA. I don't know. I have questions about his future as a pro, but shout out to Billy Cook so far.
Yeah, what he's doing is impressive. And, you know, he's not hitting the ball particularly hard, but I think what jumps out at me is that the strikeouts have not crept back up, because that was a knock on him early on. You know, you look at the first summer out of the draft, you look at his 2022 season in Aberdeen. At Aberdeen that year, he struck out almost 32% of the time and only walked about 8% of the time. Then the strikeouts were high again at Bowie last year, but then he seemed to be improving in that area as the season went on. And you look at what he's done so far this year, he has now 103 plate appearances at Norfolk, 17.5% strikeout rate to go with a 14.6% walk rate. That is really, really good. And then you added in, like Nick said, that he can move around a little bit. He's got some speed, and the home run power hasn't necessarily been there to this point the way that it was last year, but I don't really know that you need it to be with what he can bring. I don't know what his future is going to be as a big leaguer, but I do think he's going to get to the major leagues. And I could see him, just if nothing else, being a guy who has a long career as a quality depth option. And I should note, MLB Pipeline recently put him in its top 30. So he's starting to get a little bit of recognition nationally as well.
To me, you can see the way the Orioles are using their bench this year. They like having bench players that can be bench players and aren't desperately wanting more playing time. And I think Billy Cook will be the definition of that. He's versatile. They like that as well. I can already tell he's going to be one of Brandon Hyde's guys. He's going to be like the next Ryan McKenna, who coaching staff, front office, players all love. Fans are going to hate him for some reason, just because he'll come in and sparingly play and bat to like a 750 OPS or maybe a little bit less, but he'll be valuable, but not quite valuable enough for the fans to really get behind him. I'll be behind him the whole way. Plenty of puns abound with his name. So yeah, I think he's a major leaguer as soon as next year. But like you said, also, I feel like he could be a guy that is included in a deal and has more value in a trade than people may think.
Before we wrap, I just want to throw this out there. Ryan McKenna was claimed by the Giants over the weekend. He's no longer an Oriole. The Giants come in September for a 3-game series beginning on September 17th. Will we see the Ryan McKenna tribute video on the video board before his first at bat?
He's got to be on the major league team for that to happen. I think they're DFA him by then.
Can we, first of all, like Ryan McKenna and Michael Bauman in the past week or so, like go back to when we started this podcast in 2020 and then to see how their careers played out and knowing that you guys mentioned those are Brandon Hyde's guys. Did you think that we would see by May, before the end of May, both of these guys DFA'd, one out of the organization already? Bauman, I'm sure, is probably going to be out in the next couple of days. Like, I guess this is a new era. Like, Michael Bauman, and like they get a lot, not to extend this further than we need to, they're gone, but like these guys get a lot of crap from us as well, from a lot of Orioles fans, but like they served a purpose. They pitched. Like, Michael Bauman's a major league pitcher. Ryan McKenna can serve a role in a major league team, but for those guys, especially Michael Bauman, to not have a spot on the Orioles pitching staff just blows my mind. That's how good this pitching staff is, that we can't fit a guy like Michael Bauman. 2 years ago, you're relying on Michael Bauman to be a stud out of this bullpen. It sucks. It's part of the business, but it's also, as a fan, it's kind of fun, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, you can't complain. I think if you could say you're making a pick for, I can't remember exactly which rounds they were, but you said they're going to have this amount of playing time with you before they leave the organization. They'll take that every time. Just as far as where they were picked and projected to go in their career. The holdovers are kind of finding their way out, and it's going to be all Elias guys soon. Kind of funny that Keegan Aiken outlasts Michael Bauman in the bullpen. That's kind of, did not see that coming, but yeah, wish him the best, but it's end of an era. It's time for, you know, Elias's guys and the guys that came up since 2019 to start taking over.
Well said. With that, we will wrap up this episode. We will be back next week. In the meantime, you can check us out on our many social media channels, including Facebook, Instagram, Threads, X, TikTok, and YouTube. We're also on Substack, OrielesOnTheVerge.substack.com. You can catch Nick's latest draft preview there, as well as some other Orioles news. And while you're browsing around the internet, be sure to check out our Patreon community. You can sign up to become a paying member of our Patreon community for as little as $3 a month. And at the $5 and $10 levels, have access to exclusive bonus daily coverage from the three of us, as well as monthly updates to the top 50 prospect list. Patrons also have their own channels in our Discord community. You're not going to want to miss out on the benefits, so go check that out over at Patreon. For Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens, this is Zach Spedden. You've been listening to Orioles on the Verge, presented by Bet Online and part of the Believe Podcast Network.
I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In two clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clear skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clear skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them.
Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Hey, go-getters. Let Noom Sport Hydration Tablets power up your fun and keep you ready to move. Simply drop, dissolve, and enjoy crisp and refreshing flavors like strawberry lemonade or lemon lime. With 5 essential electrolytes and crafted with clean, non-GMO, vegan, and gluten-free ingredients, Noom should be your go-to hydration choice. Because when you're hydrated, you can do more, go further, and recover quicker. Shop now on NoomLife.com and get ready for endless fun, because anything can happen after noon.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. If approved, applications are typically funded the next business day or sooner. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. It's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.